Hi, everybody. Cheryl Atkisson here. Welcome to another edition of the Cheryl Atkisson Podcast. Today, breaking news on Congress apparently about to reauthorize a surveillance authority that our intel agencies have widely abused, using it against American citizens in an unconstitutional way. Inside the battle, with Republican Thomas Massie giving us the details. Thomas Massie is a Republican from Kentucky. He's on the House Judiciary Committee and involved in pitched battles and discussions right now over surveillance authority that our intel agencies have abused in significant ways. And looks like they're about to get that authority reauthorized without reforms and changes yet again. For the background and state of play, here's Massie's take. Tell us a little bit about this program that you all are discussing on Capitol Hill and why there's concern.
Well, Cheryl, the FISA 702 program was established so that our intel agencies could go after bad actors overseas without a warrant. They can spy on them. They can, you know, collect their information, their emails, photographs, text messages, all of these things without a warrant, as long as they're overseas and as long as they are not American citizens. Now, this, you can imagine in this process, they're surveilling thousands and thousands of people overseas. And I'm fine with that. We're pretty much all fine with that. But it's such a large database, and it's very tempting for our domestic surveillance agencies, such as the FBI, for instance, to go into this database and search it for data, for information about Americans. And so they do that regularly now. They go into this vast database, they, without a warrant, they can put your name in there, Cheryl Atkisson. They can put your phone number, and they can run it through the database of all this information that was ostensibly collected on foreign actors. And if you're in that database, it pops up, and they get that information. Now, they have procedures and standards and protocols internally that they themselves have come up with that they try to assure us, guarantee that your privacy is respected. But what they argue is that they are in no way violating the Fourth Amendment or any other provision of the Constitution or law when they do this without a warrant. This program, the entirety of it, the program that allows them to spy on foreigners, as well as that data being available to query with American persons identifiers, that's all going to expire on January 1st. And there's a rush now, although it shouldn't be a rush. We've been working on changes to this and reforms for many, many years. There's a rush to renew the program.
Let me, before we continue on, let me give a little more context. And if anything I say you disagree with, feel free to clarify or correct it. There have been years and years of controversy over this program because it has been found, some people call it 702 surveillance authority, to have been repeatedly abused by our intelligence agencies. And so controversy arises, I think even before you were a member of Congress, when I was covering this, with both Democrats and Republicans telling me they're concerned about the abuses by intelligence agencies. And yet every time this authority comes to be renewed, this is the chance where Congress could make some changes and reforms and hold feet to the fire, but, and I've reported on this, leadership of both parties tells the members, just vote for it. Vote for it the way it is, reapprove it. And the members, a majority of them I've been told in the past, don't want to do that, but they end up doing it because there's all kinds of reasons you can't really go against your leadership. What do you agree or disagree with in what I just said?
Oh, I would totally agree. In fact, over the last 10 years, I've been part of several efforts to fix this program or to reform it. Most frequently, using the budget process. And I've worked across the aisle with members like Zoe Lofgren on amendments. And what they tell us when we do that is, cool your jets, wait until it's reauthorized. You're using a blunt object here. This is precision work. Don't use the budget process. Wait until we actually bring this bill up and we legislate. And well, here we are. I'm on the Judiciary Committee now, unlike before when I was trying to reform this from the outside. Now I'm sitting on the Judiciary Committee. Now we have a chairman of the Judiciary Committee who wants to reform this program, Jim Jordan. And we've even marked up a bill to fix much of this. In the past couple of weeks, we've been in SCIFs. These are classified environments where you can't bring electronics in, with CIA, NSA, FBI, a FISA judge, the Director of National Intelligence. We've had the last session went over 3 hours with the Speaker of the House, you know, members of the Judiciary Committee, Mike Turner, who's chairman of the Intel Committee, and Jim Jordan, who's chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And basically, they bring you in these meeting rooms and they tell you how important this is. We cannot let this program expire. Yet inside of these rooms where we get the classified briefings, they have yet to give us one example of where, for instance, getting a warrant would have stopped them from solving some kind of crime or preventing some kind of terrorism. All the examples they give us are foreigners. And in the rare case where they might have gained information by querying, the database with an American person's name, they could have gotten a warrant. It doesn't slow them down. So, and the reason I'm bringing up the warrant is that's one of the provisions that we've insisted upon in the reform bill.
Well, before you tell me what specifically is going on with what could happen as we speak, the discussions that are probably taking place over how this is going to be resolved, let me talk about a couple of documented abuses. And what's remarkable about this is, I've reported on this, FBI Director Christopher Wray has repeatedly falsely testified under oath to Congress that there have been no 702 surveillance abuses. He said, I think, quote, "There's been no evidence of any kind of abuse of power under Section 702, which is, completely false, just looking at the public record of what we know, let alone most of which we don't know. We know that in 2011, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court found that some collection of internet data by the National Security Agency was illegal and unconstitutional. They captured tens of thousands of U.S. communications without a warrant. There were restrictions put in place that categorically prohibited NSA analysts from using personal identifiers of Americans, such as our phone numbers, to search through their internet information they collect under 702, but the government admitted violating those in a secret hearing that was later revealed. That was in October of 2016, election year. According to the judge in that case, NSA analysts had been conducting such searches in violation of the prohibition, quote, with much greater frequency than had previously been disclosed to the court. And the judge accused the NSA of an institutional lack of candor and stated, quote, "This is a very serious Fourth Amendment issue." I mean, this goes on and on. I won't go over all these examples, but none of that has been fixed or addressed or repaired. And here, once again, you're being told or asked to reauthorize this authority that's been abused without making any changes. Do you have any thoughts as to who it is at the top that gets to the leaders of both parties and convinces them to tell the members, just go ahead and vote for this?
I don't know that they're at the top. They're kind of in the middle.
Okay.
They're sort of career employees of the CIA, NSA, DOD, FBI, the FISA judges. The FISA judges aren't really the problem, though. And by the way, you're right. You used a few examples there. There have been hundreds of thousands of queries that were done outside of even the loose procedures that the FBI sets for itself. And, people have lied to the FISA court and yet barely a slap on the wrist for doing that. You know, the FBI, when they ask for information from this FISA program, what happens is, like I said, they get you in a room, they tell you the worst case. I think right now they've done this with the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. They've convinced him that if there's an act of terrorism in January, and he doesn't, get this program renewed immediately, that it's going to be his fault and he'll get blamed for it. And let me tell you some of the, here's the, here's the thing. The things we're asking for in the reform bill would not stop them going after terrorists. Okay. Number one, get a warrant if you're going after an American. Okay. Number two, it would enhance the private right of action so that, let's say you were surveilled illegally against the provisions of the program that Congress has outlined. Well, you would have private right of action to sue the person who did that for you. And there will be criminal penalties for anybody who willingly, knowingly abuses the database. Let's say they go in there and they want to find something about their ex-wife. And so they, you know, start querying the database for that. These are not adversarial court proceedings. When the intel agencies go to the judge, it's always a one-sided argument. So what we've proposed is to have amici in there, like a friend of civil liberties, who would make the counter argument, at least press back. If the judge has questions, there could be an expert in there who's not the person who's trying to get the warrant or do the spying. These are some of the provisions.
Okay, let me step back for just a second. So these secret hearings take place with a judge from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, a specially appointed judge, and the intelligence agency will come to the judge and say, tell me if this is right. You know, here's what we want to do, or here's what we did in some cases. Mm-hmm. And the judge will approve or disapprove. And you're saying there should be someone in there besides basically the people who want to do the deed to kind of look out for us, particularly since we know this has been abused.
Correct. Like, let's use the case of Carter Page. There's an example where they actually wanted to surveil somebody. And so instead of just using data that was incidentally collected in the database, well, the FBI lied on the warrant. Now, that person was convicted of some small thing and is now practicing law on the outside, the person who lied on that warrant to the judge. But it's hard for judges, you know. Judges,
let me explain that a little bit. We have people listening. Sorry, we have people listening that probably don't know some of this history, but Carter Page was a Trump supporter who, by the way, even though he was portrayed falsely as a Russian spy and smeared in the press when they were trying to get Trump, had never met or communicated with Trump himself, was just a Trump supporter, wanted to work on his behalf. He had been previously an informant or a helper to our intelligence agencies. Somehow, they used his trips to Russia, which were not controversial at all. Many business people were doing and have been encouraged to do business in Russia since the fall of the Soviet Union. But they used that in order to get a secret wiretap against him. And they lied or falsified evidence, the FBI did, to try to get they got the wiretap and continued to surveil him for a long period of time without gathering any information, indeed a spy. But that enabled them, the way they allow themselves to collect information, to get information in a dragnet from anybody who had communicated with Carter Page and anybody who had communicated with those people at least two steps past him, which likely included Donald Trump, because probably someone Carter Page communicated with had somewhere along the line communicated with Donald Trump. That allows them to pull thousands and thousands of people into this dragnet with the one bad wiretap. And only one, when this was exposed, one FBI lawyer got charged with the tiniest crime, served no time in jail. They didn't go after anybody else in the chain who knew this was going on, you know, along the way. This certainly wasn't just one guy that knew about it and did it. So that's just the most abusive example we have.
Right. Thank you for summarizing that. And you reminded me of a couple other reforms that are in the bill that we marked up in our Judiciary Committee. One is to prevent reverse targeting. Let's say there's an American that you want to go after, and you want to collect information on that American, but you're not allowed to using this spy program because it's outside of the Constitution and it's mainly meant to be outward facing at foreign terrorists. Well, if you were trying to exploit a loophole, you would reverse target the American. You would try to pick people, foreigners, who the person might be communicating with, not because you thought the foreigners were doing something wrong, but because you were allowed to spy on the foreigners and you hoped in this dragnet to catch some information about the person you were actually targeting with this reverse targeting. So we've got a reform to fix that. And then we've also got more frequent reports. It's only like through whistleblowers and blind luck. And when the FBI and the other agencies police themselves, their own IGs, when their IGs tell us that Congress actually finds out that these things happened. Well, we need more reports and the types of reports that we need to make sure they're not abusing this program. Those are also in the reforms that we marked up in our judiciary FISA 702 reauthorization.
So what is the argument when probably most members of Congress, if asked, would say, yes, let's do these reforms, when you say, we're not telling you you can't have this tool, we're saying you have to fix the abuses. But they're arguing, oh, you can't take the tool away, which you're not really trying to do.
Well, one of the arguments is, well, the Senate won't agree to this. The Senate's in a different spot mentally. And if the Senate doesn't agree, then it expires and then nobody gets to use the program, not even for terrorists. So there, it's basically, that's not a good argument, but that would be one of the arguments they might give. A FISA judge might say that they're regular judges, federal judges that sort of rotate into the secret program and they still have a regular job. They may say, oh, this is too much work. We don't have the right facilities back in our districts. We'd have to come to DC and review the warrants. Like these are some of the things, by the way, the judge did say. And I thought, well, those were all very easily solved problems.
So where are we now? As of we're talking on Sunday night, what's the lay of the land for now as to what could happen in the near term?
Yeah. So in addition to being on the Judiciary Committee, I'm on the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee, every bill that comes to the floor goes through the Rules Committee, unless they suspend the rules to get it to the floor, which and then they have to pass a bill with 2/3 vote. So these are bills that have to go through the Rules Committee. And what they're telling me, and this is, we've never done anything like this. They're telling me they want to put two bills on the floor that reauthorize FISA. Actually, three bills. Hold on, let me back up. They're worried about the expiration of this program, of this FISA program. So the speaker, while we were marking up our judiciary bill, announced to the press that he's going to attach a clean extension of FISA with
no reforms on it.
Zero reforms. Just exactly what they've been doing, the whole program they've been abusing for over a decade. They're just going to rubber stamp that and cut, copy, paste for like 4 months. And they're going to attach that to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. The NDAA is one of those bills that's called must-pass legislation. I mean, if you want our military to, be functioning and Congress to authorize it, has to be authorized every year. So we know that bill's going to pass. So the speaker said, well, to avoid any kind of, brinksmanship, I'm just going to renew this program for 4 months. Okay. So that's happening. They can probably get 2/3 of Congress to vote for that in the House because nobody wants to vote against our own military. So that's why they're attaching it to the authorization for our own military. They're because they think they can get 2/3 vote and they can bypass the Rules Committee, get this to the floor and pass it that way. Now, that doesn't solve the long-term problem, which is to reauthorize the program for 4 years or 5 years or whatever term we pick. And so there's two bills that have been proposed to solve that problem. One's come out of the Judiciary Committee and one came out of the Intelligence Committee. Now, these two committees have joint jurisdiction over this program, but primary jurisdiction is the Judiciary Committee. When the FISA 702 program was set up, it was passed by the Judiciary Committee. It was the Judiciary Committee that brought the bill to the floor and debated it and amended it. But now the Intel Committee is saying they have equal rights, which is not true. So they're
what they've proposed to me is to put...
Let's point out those committee members, in my experience, typically serve the interest of the agencies or the, you know, intelligence community contractors.
The Judiciary Committee, for instance, is responsible for civil rights, the Fourth Amendment, the Bill of Rights, any constitutional amendments. All of the courts, all the judges in the United States are set up by the Judiciary Committee, like their offices and their pay and the way they're structured. So you can understand why this should be in the Judiciary Committee. And so anyways, what they proposed is to put this week, and they're going to have to run this through Rules Committee, and we'll see if they can do that. And then they're going to have to pass this rule on the floor, and we'll see if they can do that. But they propose to have a beauty contest. They're going to put both of these bills on the floor, put them debate both of these bills, the Intel bill and the Judiciary bill. By the way, the Intel bill doesn't have many reforms at all, doesn't have nearly the reforms that the Judiciary bill, and in some ways is a reversion to something worse. They're trying to restore this kind of lone wolf provision that went away a few years ago. Now they're trying to resuscitate that in the Intel bill. So in some ways it could actually get worse with the Intel bill, but they're proposing to put both bills on the floor from two different committees. Let the whole House vote on both of them, and whichever one gets the most votes, if they both pass, whichever one gets the most votes is the one that you would send to the Senate. And I am against that, and I'm pushing back because, you know, one of the arguments to me that was made is, well, don't you think this is fair? And my answer to that would be flipping a coin is fair, but you don't legislate by flipping a coin. There are more intelligent ways to do this. The Judiciary Committee has prime jurisdiction over this. Oh, by the way, what they're also proposing this week by putting both bills on the floor is not to let anybody who's not on one of those two committees amend these bills ever. So if you're not on Judiciary or Intel, you don't even get to offer an amendment before you vote on it on the floor of the House. I think that's wrong.
Whose idea is that?
Well, can we say the deep Congress?
Listen, this is why people, no matter who's in charge of Congress, we're just constantly perplexed as to who they're really working for and what they're really doing.
Well,
so if you succeed, you can go ahead and add to that.
Well, just to answer your question a little less flippantly, the Speaker of the House is in favor of putting both bills on the floor and having the beauty contest. And I think for him, it solves a problem that he doesn't want to tick off either side. I'll tell you why there are a lot of reasons why it's a bad idea, but maybe we don't have time.
Yeah, we got time.
Okay. Well, let's say the Judiciary bill, let's say it gets 300 votes, and let's say the Intel bill gets 280 votes, and we send the Judiciary bill, the one that has the reforms to protect your civil liberties, let's say we send that to the Senate, and the senators have even less appetite for reform than the House, and they're going to say, you know what? We liked your other bill better, the one that you didn't send us, and we know you can pass it. So we're going to pass not the one you sent us, but we're going to amend it to look like the one that doesn't have the reforms. And that's the one we're going to send back to you. And now that we know your reserve price, you can't argue with us. And so that's how we might end up with a suboptimal bill out of this process, because the Senate would see that the House can pass an inferior bill, but they might prefer it.
So let's be clear, these are Republican-controlled committees that are, in essence, dueling against each other. This is in the House, the Republicans control both those important committees that are fighting for jurisdiction.
That is correct.
If you were to get your way and they don't do either of these, the beauty contest, as you call it, then what do you advocate doing? The short-term reauthorization and then fight it out over the next few months?
Well, that's a good question. Here's the way I think it should be done. And this is what I'll be arguing for Monday in the Rules Committee. And that is, since the FISA 702 program was put into place by the Judiciary Committee, since we have the prime jurisdiction over this, But Intel, you know, has a say and they don't feel like they've had enough say. Put the judiciary bill on the floor and the judiciary bill alone, but allow the Intel committee to offer their amendments, their, let's say, rifle shots at provisions of the judiciary bill that they do not like. For instance, if Mike Turner or anybody on his committee, or frankly, anybody in the whole House said, you know what, we think that warrant requirement is too clumsy. You know, we don't think you should have to get a warrant to use this database to go after, the private communications of Americans. So we're going to offer amendment to take that out of the bill. I would allow them to have that vote, okay, but only as a standalone vote so that we can all know if that provision gets taken out of the bill, so that we can all know who voted to do it. And if they carry the day, they carry the day and the reforms don't happen. But at least the voters know who kept them from getting these reforms.
That's a very interesting idea, but it assumes the ones that don't want the reforms want a fair process to flesh it out. And that's probably not exactly what they want.
It's not what they want. They want they want the game to be rigged, unfortunately. Now, will there be time? Congress is only going to meet for another week. Would there be time to do this? Yes, the House can get this done in the next week. The question then, there's the other question is, could the Senate react fast enough and pass it? Well, they absolutely could. They can either stay a few more days or they can come back between Christmas and New Year's. But if they're going to be passing an NDAA with the FISA bill on it, then they can pass the NDAA and a FISA bill that's separate. And if all of this, if we end up getting jammed, and it looks like we're going to, if they do the extension of the clean, extension of FISA 702 with no reforms, but it's a 4-month extension, that gives us until April to do it the right way. And the right way would be put the judiciary bill on the floor, allow any member of Congress to offer an amendment to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee vets these amendments to make sure they're not poison pill amendments and to make sure that they're in order and they're related to the bill. And then we have those votes on single topic, single reform issues that we might disagree on. Maybe somebody's got a way to improve the judiciary bill instead of watering it down. Let them have a vote as well. And we could do that in January if we end up with the unfortunate circumstance of this thing gets extended for 4 months because of the deadline.
Well, as someone, meaning me, who was spied on illegally by the FBI, and I'm not sure they used any authority. This was, I think, a rogue operation, but there's a number of those in play. I hope people understand how important this is. And I wish someone would get on the floor, if possible, and read a list of the known abuses, and this is only the smallest slice of things that we know of, and ask what's been done to correct these things. And if nothing's been done, which we know nothing's been done, then how do you justify a reauthorization of, people that have abused this authority for so long? I'll point out that in a related finding, and after this podcast, after this discussion with you, I'll read some more of the violations to people in case are interested, the ones that we know of. But you may remember after it was found that the FBI had misconduct, and I think arguably beyond the one criminal charge they filed against their lawyer, against Donald Trump, that they had improperly surveilled the Trump campaign, there was a review conducted, I believe, by the FISA court, the Secret Surveillance Court. It was initiated. They looked at 42 wiretap applications for secret wiretaps against American citizens, and the review found that in 42 applications, there were 390 problems, and that encompassed 39 of the 42 applications. Almost all of them were deficient, despite all the rules they have, that all this stuff is supposed to be handled so delicately and so cleanly, and as far as I know, that's never been corrected. And when you said earlier the problem's not the FISA court, maybe it's not, but I would argue that they surely have found a lot of problems and haven't, as judges, taken any initiative, it seems to me, at least anything that's been publicly released, to do anything about it. You'd think they would be outraged that this behavior that they've been lied to or misled on these wiretap applications, and that they would force something other than typically the FBI says something like, well, we will retrain our people and let them know the rules for wiretaps, which is obviously not a good answer. So I don't know. Any final thoughts about this?
Yeah. Well, we did talk about giving those judges the ability to find people who lied to them or misrepresented things to them in contempt. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one power that a judge in the regular court system has, and they can throw people in jail for contempt.
So they don't have that power now.
It's my understanding they do not.
I see.
Not in the FISA court. And so that's, you know, for instance, that's an amendment somebody could offer. I don't think that made it into the bill. But there are now criminal penalties for somebody who does that. The problem is the DOJ going to police themselves? You know, the FBI, DOJ, probably not. Will they bring themselves up or their colleagues up on criminal charges? Probably not, which is why the private right of action is so important. If you can find out that you did get your rights infringed, and that's why the reports to Congress are so important. And our ability to have more visibility into these proceedings and into the way the program's being run, because a lot of things we found out so far are just because the judges discovered it, as you just pointed out, or they decided to self-report. We need the ability. We are the overseers. We pay their budget. We need the ability to see into these programs and not to rely on them to police themselves. And that's why it's so important to get the reform version of this bill, which is the judiciary version, passed this week if we can.
Well, my final note will say that at last word, Carter Page, who had a clear-cut case of a criminal act, you know, against him for the illegal spying operation. They smeared him publicly, leaked information about it improperly during the Trump campaign, tried to destroy and ruin him, and he cannot get a lawsuit or win a lawsuit against, even though this has been clearly documented. There's no doubt it happened, but the government has certain kinds of crazy immunities that mean there's no punishment for when they do this sorts of things. There's virtually no recourse on behalf of the people who were wronged. And I will also point out, I don't know if this was in any of your bills, when people have been found to have been surveilled improperly, or there were deficiencies in the wiretap applications that were executed, to my knowledge, nobody has gone to them and apologized and told them what information was collected improperly, and nobody was punished for that. I think those Americans have the right to know you were watched, that you shouldn't have been watched if that was the case. Here's the remedies. And I know in some cases when they found this type of improper collection of material, they've been allowed to destroy it, but the Americans haven't been notified that their rights were abused and violated.
Well, let me say this. There are probably things that need to be addressed that aren't addressed in the judiciary bill. Like, I think it should go further. I want to make sure your listeners understand this. Like, the judiciary bill is not some libertarian dream of how this should be fixed. I mean, probably our dream would just be, don't use it on Americans at all. Go get a warrant through the regular court process. And there are things like the 12333 executive order that need to be countermanded or constrained, or at least we need to have more visibility in it. There, I would have liked to have gone further with the judiciary product. The problem is then you lose some of the Democrats and you lose some of the Republicans. So the judiciary version is already a compromise. It may not even go far enough, but I'm willing to fight for it, because the alternative to have just a total clean reauthorization, or the Intel version, which is just sort of like a thin veneer of reforms, which, and maybe even a regression in some ways, those options are untenable. So the judiciary FISA reauthorization, it's a good bill, but it probably doesn't fix everything, but it'll give us some visibility into it. And that's why, by the way, this is another difference between the judiciary bill and the Intel bill. I think the Intel bill is like an 8-year reauthorization. The judiciary bill, I think, is half that period of time. That way, if we got something wrong, there are many of us who may still be in Congress, and we can fix it then.
Well, thank you for giving us your read on this developing story on a really important topic.
Well, thanks for covering it, Cheryl. It's very timely. And
hopefully the American people won't get a lump of coal in their FISA program Christmas delivery.
Much more after a short break.
Introducing Whipped Seafoam Body Butter by Sirenae Cosmetics. Hi, I'm Star, owner of the Lemonade Mermaid. Enriched with the nourishing powers of cocoa butter, mango butter, and shea butter, our body butter whisks you away to a world of deep hydration. Experience the essence of the sea with every application, as this whipped delight leaves your skin refreshed, replenished, and ready to conquer the day. Visit thelemonademermaid.com and make your skin sing with the magic of the sea.
As promised, here are a couple other examples of surveillance abuses that have never been appropriately addressed. The NSA, the National Security Agency, secretly expanded its authority to collect emails and other communications of U.S. citizens who'd done nothing more than mention or refer to a target of an investigation, a foreign target, in a single instance. By example, that means if you wrote an email years ago that mentioned a target phrase, let's say Osama bin Laden, the NSA could use that as an excuse to spy on you. In 2015, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court criticized that practice, saying the results likely netted information on U.S. citizens with no foreign intelligence value. Then there was the January 2016 Inspector General report from the NSA Inspector General. The report was top secret but later released. It criticized the NSA for, quote, not having proper processes in place to monitor how well it met key provisions that were designed to protect Americans. It didn't have proper processes in place to monitor instances of non-compliance, and the Inspector General criticized lack of documentation proving that NSA analysts were meeting requirements prohibiting targeting of U.S. persons who are in the United States. In other words, there's strict rules to try to keep our intelligence agencies from improperly targeting Americans. That's not what they're supposed to do, these agencies that are supposed to target foreign people and foreign terrorists. But they've increasingly, as we know, turned these tools or weaponized them against use against Americans and their political enemies and political targets. And the Inspector General was saying in 2016, again, an election year, that the NSA was not properly documenting that they were abiding by these rules and requirements. And the court stated, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court stated, that it appeared problems with this were, quote, widespread during all periods under review in an election year. Now think of how surveillance tools that were abused in the 2016 election year might have been used. And then previously, we already knew about public incidents in which the National Security Agency surveilled the likes of former members of Congress, Dennis Kucinich, a Democrat from Ohio, Jane Harman, a Democrat from California, and communications between congressional staffs and Israeli officials that happened in 2015. If you want to read an article I wrote about this, you could search it online. It was published in The Hill, December of 2017. The title was, FBI Chief's Claim on Surveillance Abuse Doesn't Fit the Evidence. And I wrote this after one of several times in which FBI Director Wray falsely testified to Congress that there was no evidence of any kind of surveillance abuses. Another important but I think chilling resource can be found at CherylAtkisson.com. If you go to the drop-down menu under Special Investigations, and then you go to Other Investigations on the drop-down menu, you'll see Obama Surveillance TL, which stands for Timeline. Might be easier just to go to my website and search under the title of this post, which is Obama Era Surveillance Timeline. And I put together a timeline that cross-references a lot of other resources that exposes when whistleblowers, journalists, and other U.S. citizens were improperly surveilled. And we're starting around 2009 with a timeline when President Obama promised unprecedented transparency. And I think at the time, if I had to guess, he probably meant it.
But that was followed by just a really extraordinary series of incidents that show there were problems with surveillance abuses in our intelligence agencies. I can go over a few of them. I mentioned Congresswoman Jane Harman. Someone leaked her name to the press, someone who had access to these intelligence community records. And according to the news reports, the Bush administration, the NSA under the Bush administration, had recorded and saved Harman's phone conversations with pro-Israel lobbyists. So again, that's an abuse with a really high-ranking public official when you're talking about our members of Congress that aren't supposed to be surveilled. There was the case in spring of 2011 when Obama intelligence officials captured and recorded what they called incidental private communications between another congressman, Dennis Kucinich, a Democrat, and a Libyan official. The recordings were later leaked to the press. All of this improper. And when we talk about incidental recordings, this is when the intelligence agencies are listening to a target or supposedly a legitimate target, and they happen to pick up communications with those who are communicating with that target, or maybe what they call two hops beyond, meaning someone who's communicating with someone who's communicating with the target. They allow themselves to capture all of that material. That's called incidental. And then it turns out they were abusing and going through that material that they're not supposed to do and use in some instances. Again, as far as I can tell, all of those cases went unpunished. And along those lines, the last mention I will make, which again you can find on this Obama-era surveillance timeline, is that in October of 2011, the Obama administration secretly changed longstanding policy, creating a loophole that Senator Ron Wyden would later say allowed the NSA to conduct, quote, backdoor searches of incidental collection of U.S. citizens' domestic communications. So again, they're developing this database that's not supposed to be stored initially that includes Americans who weren't supposed to be spied on. But instead of deleting those incidental communications that they're picking up in their dragnet, they're now allowing themselves to conduct searches of this material, which seems to be in blatant violation of our Constitution. And lastly, I said a few minutes ago in my discussion with Congressman Massey that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, I thought, had conducted this review of FBI wiretaps. Actually, the court ordered the review, but allowed the FBI to conduct it on itself. So as bad as that review turned out to be, with most of the wiretaps they looked at having deficiencies and violations, it was at least that bad, if not worse, if you consider that the FBI itself was conducting this review about itself. In this age of a highly controlled media landscape, it's never been more important to fight the heavy hand of censorship and support truly independent journalism. Go to CherylAxson.com and click on the Store tab for a great way to do that. There are all kinds of fun and functional products designed specifically for independent and free thinkers like you, featuring slogans like, I tested positive for critical thinking, and I need to find some new conspiracy theories, all my old ones came true. Proceeds support independent journalism causes like the Ion Awards for off-narrative accurate reporting. Go to CherylAxson.com and click the Store tab today. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast and that if you did, you'll leave us a great review, subscribe, and share it with your friends. Check out my other podcast, Full Measure After Hours. And now you can support independent journalism causes by visiting CherylAxson.com and clicking on the Store tab. There are some thought-provoking and fun products designed exclusively for independent and free thinkers like you, such as products with the slogan, I need to find some new conspiracy theories. All my old ones came true. Proceeds benefit independent reporting causes. Do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself.